Welcome to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Listen and grow as Del questions the status quo, encourages you to think differently, and empowers you to make a better life. Get ready as Del challenges core beliefs, seeks the truth, and reveals the roadmap to the lifestyle you really want. And now your host, multi-millionaire, national award-winning investor, CEO and founder of Lifestyles Unlimited, Del Walmsley.
Hello and welcome to the Del Walmsley Radio Show, where the hype ends and the help begins. I'm your host, Andy Webb. Yes, I am filling in today for Del. Del's out and about somewhere. Had the opportunity to sit in Del's seat before, but I had to go check. It's been quite a while. In fact, at this time a year ago, if I'm remembering correctly, I think he was on vacation overseas, somewhere in Europe, living the lifestyle, and that's good, right? We talk about that. It's not the money, it's the lifestyle. You may get to the money, you got to then enjoy the lifestyle. But I have no idea where he is right now. But I will tell you, these are some big shoes to fill. You know, when Del talks, he brings a lot of big picture ideas. You know, thoughts around mindset. Because a lot of times we have to shift your mindset from where you are now to where you should be to do what we do to, again, build that lifestyle. Del's bought a lot of apartments, and that's all great stuff. I'm going to go much smaller today because I'm on the hunt for a single family rental house. So compared to the size, right, the number of units of an apartment community, I think you would agree one single family house is just, I'm going to put this in air quotes, it's smaller, right? Though the returns need not be, I will underscore that. So let's talk about today, how I plan to find a house, get it under contract, how I plan to finance this house. This is very, very important. How you finance your investment is very important in rental real estate. What sort of renovations I expect to do, and what I'll do with it once those renovations are complete. And I'll tell you, I've never bought an apartment on my own like Del has, but I have bought a lot of houses. So who am I? In case you're new to the show, maybe you've just joined the program within the past year since I last had the chance to sit in for Del. Let me introduce myself. At the first part of this segment, make sure you know why I am more than comfortable telling you about investing in single-family rental houses, and then we'll get out on the hunt for that house. So who am I? I'm an investor based in Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas, North Texas. And in fact, Del was my mentor when we joined Lifestyles Unlimited, which was way back in 2012. So we've been members, my wife and I, for quite a while now. In fact, I've been an investor coming up on, it'll be 15 years soon. So we've been investing in single family houses for about a decade and a half. And we just started buying single family rentals, right? Just single family houses back in 2012. And we just kept buying. Every time we had enough capital to invest in another one, that's what we did. When we could find that property that met our investing criteria, right? We're particular, right? We don't just buy anything that pops up. We're particular with what we buy. But through that process, we retired my wife in 3 years, and eventually I pulled the trigger and retired from corporate America. It's been, I guess, about four and a half years or so ago. I was still 47 at the time, still in my 40s. But I tell you that number because that was 20 years ahead of my, quote, retirement age, right? For my birth year, they tell me 67, and I think it's 2 months is the age I should retire to get that full Social Security. Well, I've done well above anything I'll ever get from Social Security and was able to step away from that corporate world 20 years ahead of that targeted age for the government anyhow. We've created a ton of passive income from those single family houses, and now from multifamily as well. Now, I said I have never bought an apartment, but that's not precisely true. I've never bought one on my own as an independent rental owner, but we have invested quite a bit since 2020. We started in 2020 investing in apartments as passive investors. We're over a dozen, 15, 16 investments at this point that are active. We've had a few that have gone full cycle. But anyhow, in that time, I went back and checked. We've grown our net worth over 3,000%. That sounds like a big number, but if you think about the effect of small numbers, really we were starting with a pretty small number back in 2012. It's indicative of a small starting point, but we've really been able to grow that, and you can too. And a big point I want you to take away there, as kind of hinting at, is you don't have to have just a ton of capital to get started. So back to apartments, we've actually gotten into a couple of passive investments, actually a number So far this year, again, that's as a passive investor, I just put my money into that apartment syndication. I let somebody else lead that. We call those leads. They manage the business. They manage all the renovations, everything that goes into that. So we've added to our passive investment portfolio, and I'd like to now balance that out by adding to our portfolio of houses, in part because those houses have really been the foundation, our cash flow foundation. Again, got my wife retired, got me retired. How does that happen? When you invest in enough properties, whether houses or apartments, that are kicking off enough cash flow, that all of that passive income meets or exceeds your monthly housing expenses, household expenses, or maybe it meets or exceeds your income from your job, you can leave that job. That's what we did. And that was all based on the houses. Apartments came later. And we've invested in houses all around Dallas-Fort Worth. Again, I'm based in Dallas-Fort Worth, and there are a lot of municipalities, a lot of little suburban towns. We've got some stuff in the exurbs. We've even got some houses down near Houston. So we've stretched out a little bit. Most of what we've bought over the time have been renovated or rehab houses that we've had to go in and renovate, though we did buy two new builds. So I have a little bit of perspective on going straight conventional. And in fact, having bought those new houses, yes, they have low maintenance, basically no maintenance. Everything is new. Things are under warranty. I can tell you now that the equity gains that we got through the process of buying those new builds are nothing compared to what we got when we bought our renovation, our rehab properties. They're just much better, the equity that you get on the outset. And we'll talk about that a little bit. But so that's what we're hunting for now, not new builds. We're really looking for that rehab house. So let's look for that rehab house. I'm going to walk you through the process, what I think about, how we go about this so that you can think about this. And if you're considering, right, investing in your first single family house, a lot of what we'll talk about today, you can take away and you can run with this. If you want more information, if you want more detail, I will tell you, and I've got the brochure here, not the brochure, this is the textbook that I got when I went earlier this year to the Investor Skills Intensive. This is a two-day seminar, 16 hours, Saturday and Sunday in this case. First day was devoted to single family. So what we're going to talk about today, we get into, the name says it all, Investor Skills Intensive. It's a lot more intensive than what I can cover in four segments on radio or however you watch this. Maybe you catch this on the podcast. Day two, by the way, gets into apartments. So if you don't think you want to do houses, we talk about that on day two. So Investor Skills Intensive. If you want to learn more, go to lifestylesunlimited.com. Click the Start Here button. That'll talk about the Investor Skills Intensive there. But so you know who I am. Been a longtime investor in single family houses, shifted into apartments as well. I like to balance. I like to have some of both. So we are on the hunt. So let's look for that rehab house. And it starts with clarity. Like I said earlier, I'm not just going to buy anything that pops on my radar that seems to have a low price. We really have to define what is it that we want. What is that house? What does that house look like that I want to add to my portfolio? This is something you really need to think about before you pull the trigger on that first property. I've talked to a lot of members that bought just because the price was right, not members at Lifestyles, other investors out there in the broader community. Sometimes those are condominiums. Sometimes those are townhomes. And we'll learn. They'll tell you in the two-day intensive. Stay away from condos. You can't control every part of that building. Don't buy it. Don't buy a half duplex, by the way. Same issue. I've driven around town and I can tell when somebody owns one half and somebody owns the other because the roof is different. It just looks goofy. So you want to have complete control. And that's why I like the single family house, because I maintain control. And one thing that I control is my investing criteria. And this is what you need to think about. There are numbers involved. There is geography, the location. There's the footprint of the house. There's the age of the house. What are you comfortable buying? I've seen houses come across my desk that are 1800 years, you know, from 1800s, 1899. And then there's a level of renovation. So let's talk through those really quickly here before the segment ends. Numbers, things you want to think about. We buy this because we want the passive income. So we need to see cash flow. It has to cash flow. What kind of cash flow do you need to see? Now, typically, we'll tell you at the two-day, we're looking for houses that cash flow anywhere between $200 and $600. So that's an absolute dollar amount. But I want to know what is my cash invested to acquire and rehab that property. That's going to determine my cash out of pocket. And I can tell you, I also have a criterion around my cash on cash return. And that's a measure of my annual cash flow divided by my cash invested. Okay, we'll talk about how we finance this because this is very important to getting to that denominator, that bottom number in your equation. Cash on cash is cash flow divided by cash invested. I have certain criteria around that. If it's below a certain number, don't touch it. In the 2-day, they'll tell you anywhere 8% to 30%. Can you get greater? Absolutely you can. Have I had bigger returns? Absolutely I have. And speaking of returns, I do see we're coming up on a break, so we're going to return in just a minute. So if you'll just hang on, we're going to get back to the criteria, and then we're going to go look for that house. So stay tuned. Welcome back to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Yes, this is not Del Walmsley. You may be able to tell from my voice. If you're watching the video podcast, you'll clearly see this is not Del. Different guy. My name's Andy Webb. I introduced myself in the prior segment, and I'm a longtime investor in single family houses, also invest passively in apartments, but I'm on the hunt. We've already gotten our quotient of passive investments in apartments done for the year. I do see a couple more coming on the horizon, by the way, but what I'm really looking for now is a single family rental house to balance this out. And we're talking about investing criteria because it's very important to have clarity about what it is you're seeking. Otherwise, you're just going to buy some random property that doesn't make sense. So you need to have clarity. Numbers are a big driver of that clarity for us because we have to see cash flow and have an absolute minimum amount that I need to see personally. And I need to see a certain cash on cash return. As we talked about, that's a measure of my annual cash flow divided by my cash invested in this property. And I'm talking about my actual cash out of pocket, not the purchase price, not the purchase price plus rehabs, actual cash out of my pocket. That tells me my cash on cash return. That's a big determinant for me. On top of that, I want to see a certain amount of equity capture at the outset. I mentioned when we bought our two new builds, we didn't get much equity capture. We got a little bit just because these were closeouts from the builder. But with our rehab houses, we can get really big numbers. Let's say I have $20,000 invested in a rental house. That's, again, my cash out of pocket. But at the end of the day, I have $40,000 in equity through the process of adding value through the renovations. What is that? Well, that means I've added an additional $20,000 on top of the $20,000 I put in. That is a 100% return. So I have a certain minimum in terms of how much equity I want to see in dollar amount and in percentage terms. Okay, so you need to think about those. Last number I would tell you to think about is your cash out of pocket, especially if you're just getting started and you have limited capital, then you need to be very careful how you spread that capital. I can tell you now, the more houses you can buy at the outset, the better it is. It may sound counterintuitive, but it's easier to manage 10 than it is to manage one. Does 10 sound like a big number? I don't know what your starting point is, but I can tell you, you can get there. Did I think at the beginning 10 was going to ever be attainable? I don't know. I thought it maybe. You know, Dell was my mentor and I was pretty inspired at the time. And we did get there. But it may seem like a stretch, and you may have to stretch. And one thing you can stretch is your dollar by keeping your cash out of pocket to a minimum. Now, where are you buying? That may affect your cash out of pocket. If you are on the coast right now, think about your geography. You may love living in San Diego, but does it make sense there? Is your cash out of pocket per house going to be $100,000, $200,000, something like that? Well, if you can invest somewhere else like Kansas City, Missouri, I bring that up because we have a lot of members in San Diego buying in Kansas City. Why do they do that? Well, those returns that we just talked about are much, much better in that market, much, much better here in DFW, much, much better in Houston, San Antonio. Go over to Georgia, right? We see a lot of stuff around the Atlanta area. Go over to Tennessee, Chattanooga. I get investment emails from the realty team there all the time. Chattanooga, Knoxville, you're going to see better numbers if you're on the coast. So geography, think about that. If your location where you are makes sense, then you may need to dial that in. Again, I'm in Dallas-Fort Worth. Are there parts of DFW where I will not go? Yes, there are. Are those what you might call war zones? Yes, they are. So you need to be aware. The numbers, by the way, in a war zone, the returns look great because that price is so low, but there's a reason. That's going to come with some management headaches. You don't want that. You do not want that. So think about where it is you want to buy. And if you are a member at Lifestyles Unlimited, know that the Lifestyles Realty team is in multiple states where we find that investing in residential rental real estate, both apartments and houses, makes sense. I named a few of those markets. So where's that? What's that geography? What's that location? What's that municipality? And what's the footprint of the house that you're looking for? I think about this. This is important. I have a determinant around square footage. I don't go below a certain square foot or above a certain. For me, it's 800 to 2,000. Too small, below that. Yeah, 800 works in some markets. Above 2,000, then I find that my repair costs are too high. Right, just per square foot, it goes up significantly. So I want something in between there. I like 1,500, quite honestly, is a great square foot. What about the configuration of the house. Three bed, two bath, two car garage, that's my ideal, but I will deviate. I've learned over the years that I can't always find that particular footprint of a house. So you learn as you develop your criteria and as you invest and as you become savvier and gain more experience, you will refine or perhaps expand your criteria. Will I buy a four bedroom, one bath house? Yes, I will. I'll look for ways to add a second bath. You can do that. Will I buy a house that has a converted garage? Absolutely. If all the other houses in that neighborhood are going in that direction, why not? That's what people like there. That's what people are doing there, and that's okay. But you need to determine what you're comfortable buying. What about age? Yeah, what about age? I'm in my 50s now, and I like buying houses that were built in the 50s. Is there a correlation there? No, there's not. But I find they have, at least here in North Texas, they have pretty good bones, and they're typically pretty high in terms of deferred maintenance. There's a lot of work that needs to go into that. Ooh, isn't that scary? Well, that's the other determinant, is your level of rehab. These two tend to play together. The older the house, the higher the rehab tends to be. Not always. I've walked 80s builds that were just complete disasters because the hoarders that lived in them just tore them apart. But you need to determine, what is your comfort level? Do you just want cosmetic repairs? Are you okay lifting the foundation here in Texas where we have the clay soil? You need to figure that out. If you say nothing that needs foundation repair, you're going to be leaving a lot of good opportunities by the side. Consider the age. A lot of people say 80s or newer because I don't want cast iron piping. But if you can learn how to handle that level of renovation or have a team that does that for you, really, you'll get a lot more opportunity. And the buying opportunity right now seems to be in that little bit of an older niche, at least in my target areas. So those are my investing criteria. I have brackets around each and every one of those: numbers, location, etc. Things that determine what I will and what I will not buy. And that allows me to very quickly see, because I have got a lot of, we're going to talk about finding that house. I get a lot of people that send me opportunities, and I can very quickly say, based on numbers, based on location, based on configuration, no, and just keep it moving along. So I'm not bogged down in the mire. So let's talk about that target house. Where am I finding these? I mentioned I'm getting these emails. Well, I already mentioned Lifestyles Realty. I get those from them all the time. I'm a member. I work with Lifestyles Realty. I've bought a lot of houses through Lifestyles Realty. There are other realtors out there, though. Yeah, you can find a pool of realtors. Do you have to work with only one? Absolutely not. The more, the merrier. And aside realtors, you should build up a pool of wholesalers. These are people that are not realtors. They're not licensed necessarily. Some are, but they're very good marketers, and they market to people that may need to sell a house or want to sell a house. Who are these people? Sometimes it's probate situations. Someone has died. Someone has inherited a house, doesn't know what to do. Sometimes it's people headed to foreclosure, right? There are lots of lists out there, places you can go to determine who these people are, and they're very good at finding them and marketing to them and getting a contract. And then they'll find the investor like me and sell that contract to me. You need to meet these people. How do you find a wholesaler? A lot of networking events. Find those networking events in your area. If you're buying out of state, okay, well, how do I do that? Get on social media. These guys are posting their investment opportunities. I'll go to, I don't know, there are a ton of Facebook groups here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area where wholesalers post their deals. Social media. If you are in an area that is amenable to your buying criteria, drive around. You might see bandit signs. Now, here in Texas, they push some legislation through that makes there's some penalties around the bandit signs. But if you see one that says I buy houses, or they says I got a 322 for sale for whatever number, call that. That's a wholesaler. Get on their list. Don't be afraid. Okay. So realtors and wholesalers, I just let them do the work. Other people's time. I don't want to put my time in. We did targeted letter and postcard campaigns in the past, my wife and I. It takes a lot of time. Now, I do troll the listings on the MLS. That's a good place to go as well. But simply Lifestyles Realty give me a lot of options. That's really the best place to go. So, quick break. We're going to head into a midterm break here for the show. And when we come back, we'll talk about the contract, the financing, and we'll roll.
Teaching you with a roadmap to creating the lifestyle you really want. Keep listening. The Del Wamsley Radio Show returns in moments.
Want to build income without a second job? Learn how real estate investing can help you create extra income one step at a time with Lifestyles Unlimited. Text radio to 88007. That's RADIO to 88007. Presented by Lifestyles Unlimited.
You're hearing the Del Wamsley Radio Show. Want more life-changing knowledge? Access our podcast and listen on demand at lifestylesunlimited.com under the radio tab. Now your host, Del Wamsley.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. No, you're not listening to Del Walmsley today. You've got Andy Webb with you on the radio. If you're catching this on air, if you're watching the podcast, especially the video podcast, you can see this is a different guy. By the way, this guy also does a radio show for Lifestyles Unlimited. It's called the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show. If you go to lifestylesunlimited.com, click on the podcast tab, you can find the shows there. I'll be filling in for Del next week, by the way. We're going to conclude our show here in the next couple of segments talking about buying that house because I'm on the hunt. This is fresh on my brain. I've been walking properties. I've been looking at properties. I've been crunching the numbers. So I'm very intent on getting a house here very soon. Next week, though, I'm going to look back with you. Again, I've been doing this for almost a decade and a half and talk about some of the things that maybe I wish I had done differently, right? I've got a lot of observations, things I've taken away from that decade and a half of owning, buying, renovating, owning, managing single family houses and investing in apartments. So we'll talk about that next week. So be sure to tune in. But let's wrap this one up. By the way, if you have any questions, send those to me at askandy@luinc.com. Again, askandy@luinc.com. So we're looking for that target house. We're getting leads from people like realtors and wholesalers. We talked about how to connect with them. You know, you may see a house that looks interesting, looks vacant, broken window, tall grass, send a letter. Get on the County Appraisal District website. Find out where the owner lives. It's probably not owner-occupied. Find out who that is. Send them a letter. We picked up houses that way. You can do it too. We had very direct mail campaigns for a while, but the price per lead simply got too high. It was very competitive. It took a lot of time. And my wife and I agreed, well, we're in this for the lifestyle, not the money. Let's just take a break. So we look for other people's time, other people to help us get these properties. And if you are on the coast, by the way, I mentioned this with respect to your investing criteria and geography. Once you set that criteria, you may look around in San Diego, California, or wherever you are and determine it doesn't work here. Well, that's where Lifestyles Realty really can be a big help because they are in markets where it does make sense. And yes, you can invest from afar. We have countless members that have done that. And that's a great thing, by the way, if you go to an investor journey night, meet somebody that is investing across state lines, talk to them, see how they've done it, get their tips and tricks, right? Get that inspiration and go do it. Get it done. And speaking of getting it done, you find that target house, you walk that target house, it meets your investing criteria. You got to get it under contract. Now, maybe that wholesaler has the contract. They sell that contract to you. That's how they typically will handle that. It's called an assignment. But commonly, I'm just letting the realtor that I'm working with handle that. Now, if I do find an opportunity that I'm working directly from the seller, and we've done a lot of these, I just use the TREC here in Texas, Texas Real Estate Commission, 1-4 family residential contract. You can get that at the TREC website. It's downloadable. It's a fillable PDF, super easy to use. Acquaint yourself with it. It's about 16 pages, but a lot of verbiage, a couple blanks that you fill in. And speaking of those blanks, when you are writing that contract, whether you're having a realtor do that on your behalf, you need to know what to tell them sometimes. Lifestyles Realty, they know what to write into these. But if you're working with an outside realtor that's not familiar with investors, what line items might you fine-tune in that contract to sweeten the deal? Well, there's earnest money. If you buy a house retail for your personal residence, typically that realtor is going to say 1%. Purchase price $300K, let's do $3,000. Purchase price $150, let's do $1,500. What about you, the investor? You can make it what you want. I've seen low amounts because they're a little bit nervous. If it's a really good deal, I'll take it up higher. Let's go $10K. If it's a really good deal, you can really sweeten it just by the earnest money. Option fee. Well, if you're working with a wholesaler, typically there's not an option period, right? Your earnest money that they'll dictate will go hard on day one. You need to be ready for that. If you're not ready for that, work with a realtor, find something with an option period. Note that there are states like Tennessee that do require or do have inspection periods. You can waive those, but I think in Tennessee, I believe it's 10 days that simply come with that contract automatically. That gives you a chance to get in and do your inspections, make sure everything's a good fit. Who's paying closing costs? You can sweeten the deal by saying, I'll pay all the closing costs. If you're going to do this, who do you need to have on your team? A good title company. Know what their fees are. Because if I'm offering to pay your closing costs and it's an attorney, I wind up using an attorney to close, they're much, much more expensive than my preferred title company down the road, right? It's a magnitude of difference. Title insurance, are you going to pay for that or require them? If you're an investor buying a rental house, pay it. You need to make that part of your contract. And possibly even, I've done this over the years, offer to pay the prorated taxes for the year. It's not that big. Commonly, especially if you're buying with somebody that's got a homestead exemption, et cetera. And we've even paid back taxes. You have to run the numbers, make sure that still fits your investing criteria in terms of cash on cash return, cash out of pocket, et cetera. But sometimes that's what it takes to sweeten the deal. These are things you can write into the contract to get it under contract. And a big one a lot of people need to see, especially if it's a foreclosure looming, is when can you close? When am I going to see the money? Well, we can close fast. And we can close sometimes in days rather than a matter of weeks. How do you do that? Paying all cash? You could do that. Not ideal. No, you do it with financing and not conventional financing. So typically when we're buying the renovated, the rehab houses that need renovations, we're going to buy with something called hard money. You can do conventional. Conventional typically is 20% down of 20% of the purchase price, and you got to figure out the repairs on top. That's what we did when we bought the new builds because there were no repairs. 20% down made sense. But hard money is what I've used on every single one of my rehab purchases. What is that? If you don't know what it is, hard money is simply private money. Think of it as a bridge loan or a construction loan. It's short-term in nature. Typically, they'll write it for 6 months, and it's very high interest, right? If I get a conventional loan on a house right now, 6.5%, maybe 7% as an investor, hard money is higher. It can be double that. When I first started, first house I bought, that hard money interest rate was 14%, and I had a hard time with that. But you know what? We're only in that for a couple of months while we do the renovations, and then we refinance out, so that's okay. But it is a higher risk to the lender because we are dealing with rehabs. There are a lot of variables there. And this product, hard money, is specifically designed as a tool for the real estate investor. So if you don't know what it is, you do need to acquaint yourself with this. Go to lifestylesunlimited.com. We have a lot of shows where we've talked to hard money lenders and where we've talked about the product itself. Again, I use this all the time. It allows for a fast close. Going back to that contract, I can write a contract to close in a week. If I have all the information I need, it can be days. Hard money does not care about the condition of the property. This is very important as well, because the properties we buy sometimes are in such a condition I cannot get a conventional loan on those. Hard money is very forward-looking. It doesn't care about the condition today because it's going to look at what work you're going to do and what that house will be worth after that work is done. In fact, I like hard money lenders that do send out an appraiser. It can be very helpful, and they're going to appraise that property subject to your scope of work. So you need to know what the scope of work looks like, and they're going to tell you what that value will be. We call that after repair value. And here's the key. They're not lending based on purchase price. They're lending based on that ARV. And they will typically lend 70 or even 75% of that forward-looking value. Let's just say we find a house that's for sale for $100,000 and it's discounted in that neighborhood because it needs work. It needs $50,000 in work. I'm working with round numbers here, but you can find these properties out there, even here in Dallas-Fort Worth. Buy for 100, fix for 50, and when it's fixed up, that ARV, that after repair value, is $200,000. So three scenarios for you. I mentioned cash. Yeah, cash buyer can close quickly. That's not a problem. They don't have to do all the underwriting stuff. What's a cash buyer going to pay? Well, they're going to pay $100,000 for the purchase. They're going to pay $50,000 for the repairs, and there will be some closing costs, and there will be some holding costs during those repairs. $150,000 plus closing costs, let's just call it $160,000 all in. That's all of their cash invested. Divide that annual cash flow by that $160,000, very small number. Okay, what else can I do? I can go conventional, 20% down. Now that 20% is 20% of the purchase price. So if we bought it for $100,000, I got to put $20,000 down as part of the purchase price. Let's just say that all the repairs are cosmetic, and so it does qualify. Well, that's 20 plus $50,000 in repairs. We're at 70, again, plus closing costs and holding costs during the renovations. That's about $80,000 all in. Okay, well, it's half of 160. It's better. What if I buy with hard money? Again, hard money, I'm going to say 75% loan amount here, LTV, loan to after repair value in this situation. Well, that's going to be 75% of 200 is the after repair value we talked about. What is that? $150,000. Well, what's my purchase price? $100,000. What are my renovations? $50,000. Those match in this example. It covers my purchase price. It covers my repairs. All that I bring to the table are my closing costs. And note that there are two, because we're not going to stay in that hard money loan. So we do have to refinance out. So we close once, we close twice. And there are holding costs. I might be about $20,000 out of pocket, depending on the scope of work and how long it takes. Will hard money always cover all of my repairs? No, it will not. It depends on the spread. If you're negotiating, it depends on how well you negotiate. But looking at cash out of pocket in each scenario, what does that mean to me? I can buy a lot more houses at $20,000 out of pocket than I can for $160,000. How about you? That's why we use hard money. Now, hard money also, again, is forward-looking and doesn't care about the renovations. What do the renovations look like? We're going to take a quick break, and we'll talk about that when we come back. Does it matter? It absolutely does, so stick around. Welcome back to the show. I'm your host today, Andy Webb, filling in for Dell on the Dell Walmsley Radio Show, and we're talking about buying a house because I'm in the market. I'm looking. We've been actively, my wife and I, looking at houses. Actually, we run our numbers before we look at the house. I can run my numbers on any house, tell you if I think it's worth making the trip out to look at it or not. Sometimes we don't even look at it. If my contractor's nearby, I say, hey, go give it a look. Let me know what the scope of work is. We'll see if that, plug that in, see if it makes sense. There are ways to do this and remain pretty darn passive. We travel a lot. Can I buy a house while I've been in California? Absolutely. And you can too. And we just talked about the financing. Hard money is the way to go. But what sort of renovations do I need to think about? Well, it depends on the property. And it usually depends on the age, which is why that needs to be part of your investing criteria. What level of rehab renovations are you comfortable dealing with, especially if it's your first house? What age of property? Right, the older the property, the more skeletons there are in that closet or under the pier and beam in the crawl space or in the basement if you're buying in Kansas City. So age of property really does drive a lot of the renovations. So again, investing criteria, very, very important. I personally, I bought a lot of 50s builds around the Dallas-Fort Worth area. I like them. I just, based on my experience, I like them. Will I buy an 80s? Absolutely. I have a number of those as well. Different bones, right? Different electrical, different plumbing. So let's think about that 1950s build. What might my renovations look like? What do I expect before I even look at a house? I know there's going to be cosmetic stuff, and it may not have been touched since the 50s. I've seen a lot of those. Or sometimes they've done a little bit of an update in the 70s. I see it a lot. They put the carpet down on top of the hardwood. I love that hardwood. If we could pull that carpet back and just refinish and stain that hardwood, oh, I love that. Renters love that as well. It looks great. But in any event, there's going to be cosmetic stuff because we need to bring it to the modern era, right? We need to bring it to the modern day. That's paint. That may be flooring. That may be new stainless steel appliances. You have to look at your market where you're buying that house. What do other rentals look like? What's leasing for your price point? You need to mirror that. Can you go a step higher? Yes. Can you go way higher? Don't do that. You don't need to overinvest over rehab, but cosmetic for sure. I guarantee you I'm going to have to be dealing with that. And there will be some of what we call the big five. These are the big ticket items that may be less of an issue on a newer build, and certainly not on a new build, but more of an issue commonly on older houses. And the big five are foundation, plumbing, and that's both the sewer and water lines, roof, HVAC, right, the air conditioner and furnace, and then electrical. Electrical can be rewiring. I've never had to do that. Commonly, it's on a 50s build, I may just simply need to upgrade the panel, right? It might be 100 amp. I need to take it to something a little bit bigger because it is the modern era, and we have a lot of electronics, and I don't want the breaker to be flipping every 5 minutes when everybody's got their phones and everything else plugged in. So electrical can be a big ticket item. I budget for at least three of those commonly when running my numbers sight unseen. Okay, again, it is North Texas. We do have foundation issues. So how much do you budget? Well, the number varies on your market. Talk with some of the trades that are involved in that and see, hey, what if I'm buying a house that needs, you know, pier work on half of the slab or whatever? Just get to a rough budget number. Talk to other members at Lifestyles Unlimited if you're a member to figure that out. If you go to the two-day Investor Skills Intensive, they'll give you some framework there. There are other one-off items, by the way, that I like to consider, and some of these can carry a decent price tag. If it's an older 50s build house on a bigger lot, where I grew up, we had a lot of these type of houses with these big oak trees. Sometimes they get overgrown. What does tree work cost? I will tell you, get a lot of quotes when it comes to tree work because depending on the time of year and how busy these guys are, their prices go up and they go down. They're all over the place. Tree work can be expensive. Windows may need to be replaced. Fence work. Those are three that I like to add on top of the big five. But that's typically what the renovations are. But cosmetic is the bulk of that. It really is. What does that cost? Well, you need to figure that out for that market. If you're in San Diego buying in Kansas City, well, talk to the local general contractors that will be managing that project for you. You shouldn't be doing that. Find out what that rough price per square foot is, and then you can plug that in when you're doing your initial numbers. So we're going to do those renovations depending on the scope of work. It may take a month. It may take two. It may take three or four, right? It depends on the scope of work, and it depends on the municipality. I've bought in smaller municipalities where the permitting process just took a little bit longer because they had less staff. Right, so you need to. It might be worth having a call with that city and say, "Hey, I'm thinking about doing this thing. What's the process look like?" You know, because that can add delays. Is it the end of the world? No, just budget a little bit more. holding time. But then we eventually get to the end of those renovations. And what are we doing now? We talked about financing. We're buying with hard money. That is a short-term, high-interest loan. So we want to get out of that as quickly as possible. And you can start the refinance process before you're done with your renovations. Talk with your lender. Make sure you're pre-qualified. You should be doing that before you even buy that house with hard money. And then start the refinance because we want to get out of that short-term note. What kind of loan are we taking? Well, we want to do 30 years. Could I do 15 or 10? You could, but your cash flow will go down. We want to maximize our cash flow. Do a 30-year term, even though we're not going to hold this thing for that long. And that might be a conventional loan. If you're working now and you have W-2 income, earned income, right? Fannie Mae, the backer of these conventional loans, she likes you. You'll get approved all day long. I retired from corporate America. I can no longer do a conventional loan. What is the alternative? If you're a self-employed out there, like I essentially am, well, you can get what's called a DSCR loan. It mirrors that conventional 30-year loan. It's a tick higher in terms of interest rates, but it doesn't care about your income because it looks at the income of the property. DSCR stands for debt service coverage ratio. What is that house going to bring in terms of rent? If you don't have it rented or leased now, they'll just run a when they send out an appraiser to figure out the value of the house to determine the loan amount, they're going to also look at the market, and that appraiser will, it's form 1007, I believe, they're just going to say, well, this is the rent. And then that DSCR loan will be based off of the rent. As long as you're at parity, one-to-one, in terms of your rent versus the loan plus taxes and insurance, they'll loan to you. It's that simple. Now, we want to be higher because we want to be cash flow positive. I want my debt service coverage ratio actually higher than one-to-one just implies that I'm break-even. I don't want to be break-even. I want to be cash flow positive. So we're going to refinance into 30-year debt because we're done with the renovations. What are we missing? What are we missing? Well, I need a warm body in there that's paying me rent every month. Ooh, but if there's so much equity in that, Andy, why not just flip it? Take the money and run. Well, you're going to miss out on a lot of tax advantages, and I mean a lot of tax advantages. We're going to hold it for at least a year and a day because that's going to take us out of earned income tax rates and into capital gains rates. Those are 0%, 15%, or 20%, depending on your tax bracket. So compare that to your earned income tax rates, and you can see that that can make a big difference. Plus, once we rent it, we do get that cash flow. That's the goal here, is building up that cash flow. That's what got my wife retired. That's what got me retired. And that's what can get you retired. So don't sell that thing. Hang on to it for a period. If you rehabbed it right, maintenance goes to zero, no headaches, and then sell it. Do a 1031 tax-deferred exchange and reinvest. Double up again, and before you know it, you are living the lifestyle.
Thank you for listening to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Want more of Dell's unconventional wisdom? Go to lifestylesunlimited.com and click the radio tab. Listen to past shows, hear podcasts on demand, and find out how you can change your life today. The Del Walmsley Radio Show is part of the Lifestyles Unlimited Radio Network.
The information and opinions you hear on the Del Walmsley Radio Show are those of the host, Del Walmsley, his guests, and his callers, and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, its affiliates, its management, or advertisers. The Del Walmsley Show is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a professional regarding your personal investment needs. Nothing presented on the Del Walmsley Show constitutes an endorsement, recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or security.